Our present semester structure is not very good for this, however. If you're out in the practice of engineering, usually you have to get into the field or be moving 10, 12, 15 hours a day, whether it's in the office or in the field, during the month of May, perhaps in April some. And you don't really get things buttoned down until the last of October and into November and so on. So we see here the possibility of a semester program, single semester, which would begin perhaps in November and finish in April. Now this is difficult from a staffing standpoint, because this is a one semester program rather than a two semester program. So here you have a half of three quarters of a man's salary for a year. What do you do with the rest of the time? Well, this puts a bulge on your staff for this period of time. So this is difficult to staff for. I'm convinced there are no staffing problems that we can't solve one way or another. We'll solve this one. But this is an area that we want to move into more heavily. We're going to probably try to get much more continuing education moving in Anchorage, electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, civil engineering, Arctic engineering, engineering management, and so on. We've gotten a great response down there. We've got a pretty good response here in Juneau. And we see this as just an area which was blossom out. I think that it's going to be more important perhaps in our undergraduate engineering program in a matter of 5 to 10 years. Fairbanks is certainly going to grow. We don't have a great deal of continuing education in Fairbanks. This is engineering continuing education now in Fairbanks at present. This is an area which will grow, and certainly the continuing education program in Fairbanks should be as important as the one presently in Anchorage. There are problems with continuing education. We have only so many engineering faculty. We have these people on the airplanes continuously. We would like to cut down on this if we could, because this is a rather difficult job to be teaching courses where you're flitting here and flitting somewhere else. And of course, during the months of December and January, the airplane is not very dependable in Alaska. We have people who go to Juneau and sit there for 3 or 4 days. They teach 1 3-hour course, sit there for 3 days, sometimes 4 days. This has happened in Anchorage, although not so much because the communication is pretty good between here and Anchorage, but there are bad days in Fairbanks in Anchorage. So occasionally we have professors who have a class in Anchorage one night, a class the next morning here. They missed a class the next morning. They couldn't get out of Anchorage or the other way around. So we'd like to get out of this if we can, but we don't want to get out of it if we indeed can't handle the demand. At the same time, it's necessary that we handle the demand. We've said we'll go any place, any time, as long as there's a good purpose for going there. We'll stand on this, and we'll continue to teach any course, any time, as long as there's a demand for it, as long as we can field the course. But this is a problem as far as professors are concerned. It's a difficult problem. Some of the professors are gone three nights a week to teach these courses. Well, this is difficult. Now, we have some problems, and one of the next thing under new directions I have laid out here, enrichment programs for the state's high schools and elementary schools. We have a selfish motive here, we have to confess, and I'll talk about the selfish motive in a minute. But we have found that there is a good deal of latent demand on the parts of the high schools, kids in the high schools, and the kids in the grade schools, to have someone come from the university and lecture to them for 45 minutes or an hour or 2 hours on a specific topic. There are a number of kids in the grade schools, fifth, sixth, seventh grades, who are very much interested in sciences. They're in small towns. Science education may not be too great in these small towns. Sometimes it's excellent, but it may not be too great. Many times in the small towns, the parental background is not a scientific background. I can hardly imagine a scientific background of any consequences in very many homes, in, let's say, Skagway or Hoonah or someplace of this type. But the kid's interested. He's had something to read. He's had a teacher who's inspired him. Something he's interested in. By having a university professor come in for a few hours on a Saturday, and I'll emphasize Saturday, these kids catch fire. They just go wild. We've done this in Fairbanks. I had one night a year ago, Mrs. Lloyd Burgess tackled me at a PTA meeting. She said, my kid is interested in such and such. Why doesn't the university do something about this? Well, of course, you continue to hear this. Why doesn't the university do something about everything? But this is something we could do something about. So we have a very dedicated young faculty in our college, and I mentioned this to one of the young faculty members, said, yeah, do something here. So he developed a program for Saturday, a couple of hours. We invited, just as a test flight, we invited probably 15 kids from one grade school in Fairbanks. They trooped out here and up into the building, and they sat there for 2 hours, and they just ate it up. We still hear about this. They still talk about the things that happened that day. And we've gone a little further into this. We had a program this fall in chemistry. The other one happened to be in physics. We had a program this fall in chemistry, and the kids eat it up. And the teachers think it's great. Kids go back to school, tell the teachers about this, and the teachers begin to question about what happened there. Teachers in other schools, can't we get in on this, and so on. So we see, particularly with the young faculty, we see a great deal of possibilities here in getting to these grade school kids with an enrichment program. We have the equipment. Many times have equipment that no high school can possibly have. We think we can knock some of this equipment down into the 400 or 500 pound league so that we can handle it on airplanes, haul it into the school, put on the program, fold it up, and go on to the next school. And this evokes great excitement in these schools. Now I'll get back to the selfish part. In the college, we have seen over the years a number of students go outside at the end of the sophomore year. And these were usually, some of them were asked to go, of course, but many of them were gifted students. And we have felt inadequate. And we've asked ourselves the question, how can we keep these kids here? Should we keep the kid here? We feel very definitely that our first duty is to the kid and not to the university. So if indeed we feel the kid should go, we very definitely tell him, go somewhere else, go to this school or that school, because they will do better by you. And this is our first duty, is to this kid. But oftentimes we feel that if we could flex just a little bit, and we can, but we don't flex enough, we can handle a kid of this type and get him through college a little faster, and perhaps give him a fine education. Presently in the university, there is the mechanism of obtaining credit by examination. We're trying in the college, and it's a little difficult to get all of the faculty fired up over this, but some of us are trying to get the faculty fired up over the idea of obtaining much more credit in this university by examination. So the kid can come in here, be sharp, read by himself under the tutelage of this faculty member or that faculty member, with the idea that he will indeed get lots of credit by examination. Now, we feel that there are some students who come in here who probably graduate in 2 years if this mechanism were available to them in large quantities, so we could really take advantage of it. The mechanism is well greased. We hope in our college to be able to do this, so that a kid who's really good in science or math or engineering, who can indeed read by himself with some help from a faculty member, get in and take these courses, take them rapidly, and if he's sharp enough, graduate in 2 years, rather than be locked into a program which essentially requires 4 years for graduation. Again, I'll mention something else here in a minute which will reinforce this idea. We continuously seek less expensive educational techniques. We're a very expensive institution. I looked at the dollar values. I didn't bring them over for obvious purposes. I looked at the dollar values of education in our college, and you wouldn't believe it, I'll bet, but they're pretty high. They're very high. We keep going higher and higher each year. So we're continuously fumbling around, looking around, trying this, trying that, in an attempt to educate more students in a cheaper manner. Fewer professors, fewer square feet of floor space, fewer heat. Fewer BTUs and heat, fewer dollars per student. We have not been eminently successful at this, but I assure you, we're looking, and we work continuously at this because we're aware of the costs. It's not very hard to be aware of them here. Okay, so much for new directions. Now, there will be others. Next year, there'll be more new directions, but this is what we see now. Our problems. If you will take a look at this IBM printout sheet. Okay. Over the years, I've talked to a number of professors at the university who have come from other places. And they're always, almost always, impressed by our students. The students work hard. They're a good bunch of kids, and so on. I ask them, how do you grade? Well, we have to grade a little differently here. We have to be a little more liberal in our grading. I've heard this continuously. 2 years ago, this summary, for another year, but this same type of summary came across my desk, and my eyes almost fell out of their sockets when I read this first page. The next 8 pages, the next 7 pages are things like how often you date and this sort of thing. So this wasn't important to us today. But this first page, I think, is very indicting. First of all, if you go down to the last line on the page, which has some numbers on it, you'll notice National Merit Recognition. Our incoming freshmen, only 1.9% of the males and 4.8% of the females and so on, had National Merit Recognition as compared to 14.1 and 11.4 nationally. These are national figures compared with the University of Alaska. The University of Alaska's figures are in the first three columns, and the national figures, just average national figures, are in the last three. This is pretty tough. Now, if we go back up above to the center block, which says average grade in high school, we go down to the A-minus league. We find that on the average, we have about 5.9% of our students, incoming freshmen this is now, being A-minus students in high school, 5.9%. Nationally, it's 14.5%. If we go down to the B-plus league, we find 8.4 for our average, 21.5 national. Now, if we go down to the C, just plain C, just above D there, we find that our students coming in, about 19.9% are C students in high school. Nationally, it's 6.3%. These are pretty tough figures. And what this means is, of course, our students coming in aren't nearly as good as the national average. If high school grade point average is to be used as the criteria. Now this same document appeared 2 years in a row, and the story was pretty much the same. This is the latest one that I have. I haven't seen one for 68 yet. We know very well that there are good students in Alaskan high schools. We give A's in Alaskan high schools too. And it's obvious from these numbers that we are not getting the A and the A plus, B plus and the A minus students out of the Alaskan high schools are out of much of anywhere else as far as that's concerned. We're not getting the good students out of the Alaskan high schools. I'm not indicting our students. I'm very happy with our student body. But I think that the university has to make a much more concerted effort to get the good Alaskan high school students to this university. We're just not getting them now. Frankly, in my college, I would have to say that I have a sharp faculty. I'm extremely proud of the faculty that I have. I like the students. They're a wonderful bunch, but intellectually, they do not match the faculty. And these numbers here indicate that they don't, because my faculty, when they went into college, came out of this other group, the national average, or perhaps somewhat above this. Our numbers, the students that we're getting, are out of the left-hand side here, and it isn't so good. We very badly need to try to get more good Alaskan high school students into this university. After these numbers came across my desk a couple of years ago, I asked a few of our young faculty members to go out and talk in some of the high schools, Anchorage and other places, into Southeastern a little bit. And they came back with horror stories. What was worse than reading the annual report for Alaska Airlines, really. Can't think of a worse horror story. But the university was unheard of out in the bushes. And the bushes meaning Anchorage and Juneau and Douglas, places where they have doggone good high schools, excellent high schools, as good as you'll find virtually any place in the nation. They don't know we're around, in spite of the fact that we have loads of publicity going out, but the high school kid, the kid who's in the high school, and his parents, and the high school teacher, and the high school counselor, they don't know who we are, what we are, why we are, where we are, whether we're good, bad, or indifferent. They don't know enough about us. Now, the tendency in the state is whenever you go anywhere, you go south. You come back north, but you go south. And so people in Ketchikan and Juneau don't come back very far north. They go south to Seattle and north to Juneau, and that's the end of the line. They haven't been to Fairbanks. And since the turnover rate of high school teachers and counselors is very high in the state, as it is for virtually every profession in the state, they don't know that the university is alive. They don't know what's here. They can read the catalog, but the catalog doesn't really tell very much. They have lots of catalogs that tell virtually the same story for every university. We have sent more people, particularly the young people who could talk to these kids, to the young faculties in high schools too. We sent them out into the colonies, and the response has been tremendous. Last year, the university, and this was a university effort, not just a college effort, but a university effort. The university sent out several teams, which consisted of one faculty member and two students, sent around the entire state. And we did this again this fall. The college, again, the College of Math, we have made a concerted effort to do something in this area because we feel we're hurting very badly. Particularly my sharp chemists, physicists, mathematicians, these people need some good students to teach. They hunger for them, and they do a fine job with the students they have, but they could use better students. And so they're very enthusiastic about going out and talking about the wares that they have to offer. They're going out again this year. Last year we invited some of the high school teachers at our expense to come to the campus to look at us for a few days. Here for 2 days. We didn't get a very large response. First, we couldn't afford a very large response, and there were problems in getting substitute teachers. The university could not pay for substitute teachers for these people, and the individual didn't want to take money out of his pocket. So only from those schools who would allow professionally were able to get a response. So we only had 7 or 8 people here. But their eyes were about this big when they got here. We asked for people who hadn't been to the university before, who hadn't been here for some time. Most of them hadn't been here at all. One of them had been here 7 years ago, and their eyes virtually dropped out of their head, and they went back with fabulous stories to tell about the University of Alaska. We can do this with the good high school teachers. If we can do this with the high school counselors, if we can get our people out to the high schools to give a lecture in their specific areas of interest, a lecture, of course, that the kids can understand. If we can get out and just talk about the university, and I don't mean that this should be done by a counseling office. I think this should be done by the faculty. The faculty should get out because this is a group that the students will come into contact with and go to school under here. And it's really the faculty plus the physical plant we have to sell to these kids. But if we can get out and do this, and I'll tell you very frankly, I'd lay my job on the line in a minute. I'd say that in 2 years I can double the enrollment at this university. You can build dormitories fast enough, and I'm sure that if I had a little bit of money to get the appropriate people out into the colonies, I could double the enrollment at this university in 2 years. I have no question about it at all, and the students will be better than the students we presently have. And just no question about it. The kids are there. We've looked into this very carefully. How many kids are there in high school? How many high schools? How many are going to go to college? Where do they go? They're there, and they're good ones. Yep. Now, this has to be a student recruiting program has to be something that begins in the grade school. This is one of our selfish reasons, you see, for wanting to get into those grade schools. If the kid comes to our program on Saturday, his parent has to bring him. There's no school bus on Saturday. His parent has to bring him to the program. The parent, therefore, knows that he's going to hear so-and-so from the University of Alaska talk on Saturday. When the kid comes back ecstatic, it's somebody from the University of Alaska who has made him so, and the parent knows this. He has older sisters and brothers, he has younger sisters and brothers, but we feel very strongly that we have to get across to the parents, to the high school faculties, and to the kids in the high schools, that this university is here, and it's the place, the university in the state of Alaska, to go to school. You don't go outside of school anymore, you go to the University of Alaska. We feel we can do this. We have the horses here, we have a good physical plan, getting better, of course, but we do have a nice physical plan. I would not apologize in the least for the faculty in the areas that we teach. other, I realize there are weaknesses here and there, there always are. But on the average and on the whole, I certainly would not apologize for the faculty of this university at all. I think for undergraduate teaching, we are tremendous and we have a lot to offer. And once these kids find out about it, know that we have it to offer, they'll flock here. Well, it's our goal to make, again, the University of Alaska the place to go when you want to go to college if you're an Alaskan student. Now, going on with our problems. I'm sure you've heard all of these problems before. I've tried to lay them out as we see them today in order of importance. Faculty housing. Faculty housing is getting extremely pressing here. It's beyond all comprehension. I don't know how a young professor makes out, really, assistant professor. I feel sorry for an assistant professor at this university. You people have worked hard, and heavens knows the taxpayers of the state have given generously to this university. The salaries are pretty good, but they're not high enough to handle housing in Fairbanks for an assistant professor. He is at the mercy of very, very poor, extremely inferior housing. They go to college. We're demanding that most of them have PhDs when they come here to teach. Their wives work them through school. Wives have been out for 3 or 5 years working to get the husband through school. They have perhaps small children. It's a time when a mother should be in the home to properly raise those small children. It's not only her duty, but it's her privilege, I think, to enjoy those small children at this age particularly. And yet so many of our faculty members, in order to have any decent place at all to live, have to have their wives working. This is a poor situation. It's a very bad situation. Housing here is very difficult to come by. A very large number of our faculty live in apartments, and these are not nice apartment houses at all. They're, for the most part, pretty darn inferior. They're not very good. They're not what professional people should be doing in their faculty. There's nothing else around. I'll moan a little bit about the local people. They will say, well, keep the university out of the housing game. We have lots of housing around here available. But it's not housing. It's not proper housing. It's not available. They can't find houses. They can't build houses, most of them. They have a very difficult time finding money for building houses, in spite of the fact that some of the local banks have tried very hard to get money freed for housing. We find that, of course, the national press for money is very, very great. The local economy is such that all of the money is being pulled out of the banks, including the oil leases, oil stocks, and so on. Well, this then makes money for housing virtually unavailable. With the interest rate what it is in Alaska, outside money, I don't think is going to come into Alaska to build houses here, because the outside interest rate is rapidly approaching the Alaskan legal rate. So these people can't get money. They can't build the houses that they need. And I think that if there's anything that the University of Alaska can do at this stage of the game that will help the faculty and therefore help the university, is to try to do something about faculty housing. Now, we discussed this for a long time with the various possibilities and so on. That's not my function here today. Everyone has his ideas, and I'm sure a study can be made of this and we decide what is the best direction to head, and I'm sure it's a very tricky thing to do anything about. But I want to make you very much aware of the fact that it's a terribly pressing problem. And the young faculty people here are extremely bitter over housing, extremely bitter. That the housing just is not good. We have to be honest when we hire people, I think you do. I don't even say come to Alaska, it's great there. We have to tell them the tremendous challenges, the tremendous advantages. It's the most exciting place on the face of the earth to be right now. There's no question about it. But for the wife, should be at home with those young kids. If she is at home with the young kids all day in inferior housing, she'll go out of her mind in a year, maybe 2 years at best. But this is extremely important, and I can't impress upon you enough the need for adequate faculty housing. This is the most pressing need that the faculty have right now. It's not more space, it's not more, I suppose it is more salary, because with more salary, do this and that, but ultimately it comes down to housing. Now, the faculty, generally, I don't think it's jumping up and down about sabbatical leaves. There are more applicants this year than there is money available for sabbatical leaves. But I think that it's extremely important that the university be able to give large numbers of sabbatical leaves. By large number, I mean at this stage of the game, maybe 15 a year rather than 5 or 6 or 7. This number will increase as the faculty increases. It's extremely difficult when the nearest university is roughly 1,500 miles away, except for AMU, of course, but the AMU doesn't teach engineering and doesn't have much in the way of math and sciences. It's extremely difficult to keep a faculty current. We have one physical chemist on the staff, one that kind of chemist on the staff, and one expert in math in this area, and another expert in engineering in that area, but only one of each. It's necessary that they talk to their peers. It's necessary that they be able to go out perhaps and teach in another place for a year, or take courses, or travel, do this and do that, to gain new insights. This is extremely important to them. We want to have a faculty here, at least I think we want to have a faculty here, which we have to compete for each year. I want to have a faculty which can come through the door and say, well, I have other offers elsewhere, you want to meet it or don't you? I don't want to have them over a barrel. And if we don't get them out once in a while, don't get them retreaded, they have to have continuing education too, we'll have them over a barrel. They won't be able to go anywhere else. No one else will want them. And I think this is a poor faculty to have. So I would urge you in considering what it is the faculty needs, what it is that's important to the faculty, not only to the faculty as individual members, but as they actually contribute to the university, the sabbatical leaves are extremely important. We have to keep these people current. Higher salaries, continuously higher salaries. 5% nationally this year is the, a little less than 5%, but around about 5%, is the depreciation of the dollar because of inflation. If you've lived in Fairbanks, 5% sounds pretty good, because with the oil excitement, inflation was considerably worse than 5% in Fairbanks. We noticed over the summer, as an example, this is something that we can put numbers on. You can see it in the paper, we put numbers on it. Food prices up considerably in Fairbanks over the summer, more than 5%. The thing that used to sell for 49 cents now sells for 59 cents and so on. So the prices have gone up very, very radically in Fairbanks in many areas. Not in all areas, but in many areas. I also think that we have a problem in our structure of salaries at present, because we put a line, we put a top salary for an assistant professor, a top salary for an associate professor, and so on. This forces us then to, if we want to keep a man who's good and we have to give him more money and so on, to kick him across the line from assistant professor to associate professor a little too early in the game. We're selling our associate professorship rank out a little cheaper than we should. So I feel that it would be better to have more flexibility, perhaps not put the salary lines in there. We could, in one area, hire an assistant professor at $20,000 a year, another area, perhaps hire him somewhat less. But we could keep a man as an assistant professor, perhaps for 3 or 4 years in rank, kicking his salary up continuously. I oftentimes hesitate to take a new man at the end of 2 years, move him across the line. But I know it's only equitable to do so. He has to have the money. He deserves the money. And there are other things than money, you know, as they tell me, stocks, bonds, securities, and so on. But he has to have the money to live in Fairbanks. So I would recommend that the lines be wiped out so that new people farther up the line. You know about space. I don't have to. It's, I wrote it down here because I wouldn't want to be on record as not recognizing that space is important. But in our college, this is the way the faculty list the things of importance. This is my list, it's essentially the faculty's list. And space is pretty tough, but it's something we've been along with. We have to, there's no way out. These other things are areas where we feel the problems are indeed pressing. I've come to the end of my line, and I would ask you if there are any questions.
Dr. Belke, do you have in your own mind any idea about this faculty housing? We've wrestled with it for ever since the beginning of my time, and we have a limited space upon the campus with which to build faculty housing, and we stopped it because there was some improvement on the efforts of the local people to put in some housing down here at the foot of the hill in a different small organization. And I realized that the little impetus that came along there has died down, and I haven't seen any recent building of housing of any kind in the Fairbanks area recently that amounts to anything. Have you any ideas or suggestions that path to follow, other than trying to prod the local private investor to build more housing?
Most of the people, I think, want to build their own homes. They feel that the private investor who builds his own home, now this is what my younger people tell me. I've had some experience with this too, because I'm in the throes of building a house. But most of the young people would like to buy their own land and build their own homes. They, again though, came out of graduate school. They were broke. They went to work at what they thought was going to be a fabulous salary, $1,250, $1,300 a month. At the end of the year, they're still broke, maybe broker. Then the next year, they're broke-est. But their problem is they can't get the doggone down payment for the house. They need down payment money. It seems to me that some method of financing that does not ruin the local financial institutions would be a great help to these people. They need some down payment money. They need someone perhaps to underwrite a loan. And if we could embark in this direction, I think we would help ourselves immensely. I don't think campus housing is the answer necessarily. Most of them don't feel that. Now, campus housing serves one purpose, an extremely valuable purpose, and that is that it allows a person to come to Fairbanks and become acclimated to the ins and outs of Fairbanks. And this is extremely valuable because you can, if you go out and buy a house immediately, make a very expensive error. So it's necessary to come and get educated. And it allows a person to get educated to the ways of Fairbanks at minimal expense. But after a few years, a person wants to get out. Many of them after a year, they want to get out and have their own homes. But the money is unavailable to them. They have a very difficult time financing $30,000 homes, $40,000 homes.
Well, I won't go into it any deeper now because we could talk about it all night. So,
yeah.
But I have a few other ideas and we'll probably discuss it in our Saturday morning. You got to tell me Mrs. Bullock?
You mentioned under new directions the submission to your science and engineering courses in Anchorage. Is this in the budget for this year?
No. This is something we've recently become excited about and we're working on this for budget for next year, so we initiated in September. Yeah, there's some physics and some chemistry and some math. There's some other things that we need, though, and we want to say that there is indeed a program there, so if the kids can take the regular 15 or 16 hours, whatever, so they need to come up here as juniors.
And then you also mentioned there was a difficulty in finding money for the electromechanical technology. What do you mean by this? Do you mean that you have to find
the
outside of the
legislative process? Well, we feel sorry for the state of Alaska. We feel the taxpayers are pain. And so wherever possible, we try to shake the bushes for outside money. And we're in Juneau right now, or we'll be in a week or so. We've done some of this, but we'll be in Juneau in a week or so trying to get some money for this program. And we also feel that there probably is some money available from the oil companies to buy this mechanical part of it specifically. So we're trying to get outside money for this. We have asked the state for $1,000 or so for next year, but we anticipated there would be a considerably larger amount of money than that from outside sources for the program for next year. If we don't get outside money, we just won't go next year.
Well, you said that this would probably imply somewhere between 100 and 200 people a year. $1,000 a day. How would this be?
Pretty good deal, isn't it? we hope that we can generate enough outside money, either federal money via Juneau or oil company money, so that the state will contribute virtually nothing to it. Now, we have projected that the state will ultimately have to pick this program up. We hope it won't, but we know from wicked experience in the past that the state does have to pick up programs after a while. The money tree here or there dries up and federal emphasis particularly shifts. It's here 1 year and somewhere else another year. And once one of these programs begins to go, and particularly it's a successful program, you can't kill it. It must remain in operation, so the state has to pick it up. We projected in the next 5 years, the state will have to pick up the program.
Our federal vocational technical funds in this area.
Yeah.
To the state.
Right.
How much is the total program?
Excuse me?
How much is the total program cost now?
The present electronic technology program is operating at a little less than $100,000 a year. The state is footing the bill for almost all of this, and it's, I think, $93,000 or $94,000 per year.
Are you reaching a saturation point on the number of people that can be used in the industry?
No, not in electronic technology. No, the employers are tearing the doors down, trying to get the graduates. So we're not,
What another since you need this 1 year, what do you mean by another $50,000 a year to supplement your federal electronic tech program?
Right. We essentially have to hire two or three new people to handle the second year, which is the mechanical part of it.
About $50,000.
Something like this, yeah. We laid this out in the budget night. I didn't bring it today, but we have this. Is it three people?
35,000.
Okay. This is what we.
That's not in the budget request before the legislature.
No, that's what we feel we have to have in order to make the program go, but we don't anticipate getting this from the state.
Any other questions? Fine, thank you, Chuck. I heard something about earth scientists and whatnot. They were saying about quality versus quantity somewhere along the way.
At this time, it's my pleasure to introduce to you Dr. Kenneth Ray, Vice President for Research and Advanced Study. Dr. Ray will speak on the subject of interdisciplinary graduate programs. Graduate programs have been mentioned by the deans, the more conventional programs, and Dr. Ray now will go into interdisciplinary.
So-called interdisciplinary graduate program has undoubtedly caused confusion, sometimes with our faculty, certainly with our accrediting agency, and also for a time with the Association of Graduate Schools. For a long while it was considered quite unorthodox, and I think as many of the people present weren't here during those happy controversial days when it was instigated. Possibly a little historical background, a brief historical background, may help to explain the rationale behind it and give you some perspective of where we stand now as far as the program is concerned. It's almost trite, I think, to remind you of the traditional way in which universities' graduate programs grow. The department is undoubtedly, traditionally, the cognizant unit of higher education. Departments grow with enrollment. Faculty, particularly state universities, tend to be key to enrollment until there comes an ambitious time when the department and the faculty are large enough to be brave enough to state that they think they could offer a master's degree. This is usually reviewed by some committee who recommend through the administration, the Board of Regents, or whatever the governing body is called, that the time has come, and then the department is authorized to offer a master's program, and from then on they're very much on their own. They set their curricula, they assess their students, and advise the board when particular candidates have reached the necessary academic levels. Later, with more growth, the system is repeated at the doctoral level. There was a time in the history of the University of Alaska, in which Dr. Elvey, who of course was a distinguished director of the Geophysical Institute, and had experience, what I think everybody will agree is a brilliant graduate program in geophysics, became the first vice president for research and advanced studies, and immediately made it apparent that he was impatient with this somewhat lengthy procedure. Even the most optimistic estimates of the increasing enrollment at the University of Alaska, the availability of funds, almost precluded the conventional growth of faculty into broad graduate programs that might follow in the tradition of our PhD program in geophysics. There were many other things to be considered at the same time. It was just about then that it was clear that federal funding, the challenging problems of Alaska, were going to give us the opportunity to broaden our research interests and so attract a much broader faculty. And it was not difficult, I think, even then to project that it was quite likely that in the foreseeable future, those faculty who were hired essentially to do research work would become equivalent in number to those that were hired essentially to undertake the undergraduate instruction and those vigorous master's programs that we had in existence. It was also rather clear that these research people that were coming in would be orientated more towards coherent area problems than basic disciplines. They were coming, after all, because of the peculiarities of the environment here. They were not necessarily coming merely to do mathematics or anything else. They were going to solve broad problems. And so they tended to come from backgrounds of interdisciplinary training. Also, it was very clear in the whole educational system that the word discipline was becoming somewhat hazy. New disciplines, neo-disciplines, quasi-disciplines were coming into being and establishing themselves, as people want to do, into their peculiar closed shops within the trade union. We had, of course, early biochemistry, geochemistry, this sort of biophysics crept in. Then we got into even more complex things like molecular biology, cellular biology. And the thing really came to a head, I think, when we were trying to hire a team of three people who obviously had a great future in Alaska, who insisted that they declare themselves biogeochemists and wouldn't budge an inch from this. It was also clear, I think, that we were not using to best advantage the faculty we already had and the faculty we knew we were going to get in these research areas. And a number of suggestions were made as to how we could handle this. Elvin himself was extremely impatient and felt, and often expressed, Dr. Will support me, but probably the simplest thing was to forget about everything else, absorb physics and geophysics into the Institute of Geophysics, and continue to give excellent degrees. This had many disadvantages, and Albin then suggested almost flippantly that the only other solution he could think of was to develop a college of miscellaneous matters. But we had already got seven colleges, and we didn't think this was really justified. A number of proposals were put forward, and finally, almost a compromise proposal, which was, say at least unusual, was put before the Board of Regents in May of 1963, and bravely the Board accepted it. It was almost unique at the time, but I'm happy to say it is no longer unique, and whether, it's not for me to say, whether the other institutions are just blindly following the University of Alaska or through some thought come to the same conclusion. However, many people now have a program of the same type. In summary, the idea is that, well, let me put it another way. The Board of Regents bravely gave the faculty of the University of Alaska the prerogative to offer either a master's or a doctor's degree in any topic whatsoever, subject to one proviso, and that was that every applicant to a program that the Regents hadn't specifically approved, each applicant would be reviewed entirely on his own single merits, and that he would be reviewed not merely in light of his training, his competence, and his potential, but also, even more rigorously, in light of the competence of our faculty and our facilities to handle his interest. And I would very much like to quote from the proposal, which the Regents approved, because I think this sums up very well the philosophy. and I quote, "It is the fundamental assumption of this proposal for a graduate program that it be tailored to the individual needs of the student within the capabilities of the faculty and facilities of the university. Contrary to practices at some other universities, a program will be approved for a student and not for a department or other administrative unit. This enables the university to offer the best of its facilities and faculty to the student without regard for administrative structure or arbitrary conventional discipline lines. No faculty member need be limited in his opportunity to participate in an advanced program because of the limitations of the particular department to which he is assigned, and no student need be limited to the resources of a single department." I would like now, if I could work this machine, to give you some idea of what this decision you made has led to. Each student that comes into this program, regardless of his interest, is reviewed by an ad hoc committee which is set up particularly to study his application. And the report of the committee is reviewed by the full Research and Advanced Study Council. This is a time-consuming operation, but the outcome has been the following list of people admitted. I did say that the authority was given to the faculty in May of 1963, and the man who was admitted in 1962-63 was ready to go, impetuous, a sergeant in the army, one Charleston, who unfortunately didn't prove to be quite as speedy as his enrollment could have implied because he graduated last year. However, by 63-64, as you see, we were really beginning to admit people, both in master's programs and PhD programs, and the numbers admitted have fluctuated from year to year. Now, the reason for this fluctuation, because after starting students in areas where it was felt at first that possibly the faculty and facilities were not adequate to warrant a full master's program, the faculty has grown, you have approved programs, and so there's been no need to admit any more students on this system into that program. Examples here are anthropology, where we now have an ongoing master's program, and of course, we have a fully fledged PhD program in geology now. As far as the number who have graduated, this gives the numbers who have actually graduated, and you see there has been a reasonable return of people achieving what they set out to do. It is almost early yet to expect a very big return from those in the PhD programs, because as things have it, most people work only half-time as students in PhD programs because of the high cost of living in Alaska, Kentucky. And so really 3 or 4 years is a short time to expect to really see the answer. Now if I could next show you the areas in which these people have been admitted, you will see that it is indeed a point of discipline, a Catholic program. We're dealing here merely with the action of the Research and Advanced Study Council. We extracted this from the minutes of the council. So, on the first column, we have those people that have actually graduated in these various topics, first on the top of the master's level and below at the PhD level. The next column, badly labeled pending, represents no more than those that are currently enrolled and heading towards the program concerned. Withdrew is a term my secretary used rather politely, and it includes those who just honestly flunked out, those that ran out of money, and a few who have decided to get into a different program, an ongoing program. No record of those who were offered admission who obviously decided to go to other institutions or decided not to go to college. Now, if we look at this, we begin to see that we have really a substantial proportion of our graduate students currently at the university enrolled in these special so-called interdisciplinary programs. It adds up to, let me think, let me see, we've got pending currently 42 students, which must be about 25% of our total graduate student enrollment. Whether what will happen in the future, I think it's very difficult to say. We have now started a new experiment, which you approved through the budget, I guess 18 months ago, in which we're handling marine science. Or maybe I ought to point out, which is almost to be expected here, how the numbers tend to concentrate in those areas that are covered by our major institutes. You see, there are 17 of our students, well, taking this column, 17 in marine science, 16 in arctic biology, or sort of the other thing. In marine science, we have now a budget for teaching marine science, which is administered through Dean Belkley's college for financial administration, but as far as the academic administration, it is handled by a truly interdisciplinary committee. People who are appointed by the RAS Council, but drawn from various departments and indeed various colleges. So here we have now an administrative structure. There's a budget, there's a faculty, albeit a part-time faculty, that admits students, sets up committees, always with the approval of the RAS Council. These committees notify the council when the student is finished. So we practically have a departmental structure without a department. I suspect personally, seeing what is happening in other institutions, particularly in the University of California, or in some of the parts of the University of California, that at the PhD level, we're going to see a great deal more of this, in which, although basic disciplines still retain faculty, the doctoral programs will be handled by committees of this type, drawn from many departments. So from the point of view of at least the teaching at the doctoral level, the department will be a home base where you collect your pay and where hopefully you pass your complaints through a dean, but the teaching will be drawn at the convenience of the student from right across the campus. If the student wants that degree of break. I think there's very little more for me to say now, unless you would like to ask any questions.
Are there any questions? Thank you, Dr. Ray.
I have just one. This began largely in the natural science areas, but I know from your chart now that social sciences seem to be rather broadly represented too, and also the crossover between the natural sciences and the social sciences, including biology and anthropology, biology and sociology and things of this sort. Do you foresee this also broadening so that you incorporate the humanities and natural sciences, humanities and social sciences, this sort of thing?
I think it will tend to grow. I don't want to call it magic. Dr. Belkley was pointing out that you only get good students applying when they know of existence. And I think it has been through reputation institutes that many people have come in. And so I think we will tend see these interdisciplinary, the interdisciplinary enrollment stay in line with the growth of institutes. And it, as we get into all possibly different areas, such as recreation, natural resources, things of this sort, established research programs, then I think we'll get this positive. But it is a notable point, of course, that I'm sorry I haven't the statistic, the vast majority of our graduate students, certainly at the doctoral level, come from outside Alaska, which is not really surprising because of the relatively small departments to produce strong majors in chemistry, physics, mathematics, and this sort of thing. But they do come from the outside, and of course, most of them stay.
Any other questions? Thank you, Dr. A.
I would like to take this opportunity to briefly reiterate a statement or two that I made in the opening remarks this morning. You've seen now the colleges, heard from the colleges. You've seen a very enthusiastic faculty, I am sure, represented by the presentations that began with the faculty through the departments and through a college presentation. Also, you have heard some of the problems. I think in many cases this will get right down to money, to the budget. I think this very clearly points up the problem again that we all have to consider: administration, policy, and so forth. What is the place of University of Alaska in Alaska? This again gets us right down to how much effort should we put into the three major categories that I mentioned: the instruction, the research, and the statewide services. Today, I think it's been a number of places you could observe. The further question: how much effort should be given to the various academic instruction disciplines? What type of discipline should we offer? And then how far should we go with each? The enthusiasm shown by each of the presentations, I think, certainly would justify in all our minds. This is an area that we should go and this is what we should move. But again, we get into this very realistic problem of money. How far should we go? And this is going to, I think, increase and become more important as time goes along. Now, the program is essentially over for this afternoon. The last page of your agenda item indicates again that we meet in this room at 8 o'clock this evening, and this essentially will be the creative and performing arts. The agenda indicates six major items that will be here and is scheduled for an hour and 15 minutes. We'll be moving from place to place within the building, seeing demonstrations. Tomorrow morning, the session again will get underway in this room at 9 o'clock. This time, Vice President O'Neill, conclude our part of the session. Perhaps you want to go into a board meeting now and carry on maybe till 8 o'clock, when we again will be ready to go.
Would I point out that he had finished his day session precisely at 5 o'clock as he scheduled it, and then he talked for 2 minutes. That's pretty close to the on schedule.
Well, you noticed that I stayed pretty close to him all afternoon, too, and was watching the clock right alongside of him. And I am sure the Board of Regents realizes that we have had a very informative and enlightening session today. I want to thank the heads of all the departments who participated, because I think it was well worth the time that you folks have put into it, and I know it was well worth our time to be here, and I'm very sorry that there is only one member of the legislature present to learn something about our university. Of course, he's pretty familiar with it. But if there happens to be a motion to recess, I would sure recess this meeting.
I so move.
We've got to hold pretty strict on the schedule of dinner, too.
My second to the motion.
Motion dies.
Is that 6:30 we're supposed to be there? 6:30.
Transportation.